parfait.
Historic day for the Irish today. Ireland versus Romania. We're going to start with this one. We're going to get in then to Italy versus Uruguay. So what a day we have ahead of us here. Big Jack, he's tried to do as much homework as he can on Romania here. We know in previous games, I mean, I'm sure he's been alerted to Georgi Hagi being the main man. And if he's not listening to those lads in the studio, Georgi Hagi is in the RTE studio, I should say. Georgi Hagi is a pretty decent player, so I imagine he'll be looking out for that. But how are we looking in the lineups, Turlock? Because we talked about whether Aldridge, we've been talking about Aldridge, whether he will or won't play for ages now, and he keeps managing to hold on to that spot. Is he in the lineup today?
He is. There was, as we said, some speculation that Jack might go with the two big men up top, but he has resisted that temptation, and we're going to have the enthralling prospect of John Aldridge chasing fullbacks all over the pitch once again. Slightly harsh. He's a very good striker, John Aldridge, but he actually played really well against the Dutch. He just couldn't get a break. But
Ronald Koeman was famously a fan.
Yeah, Ronald Koeman outsmarted Jack on that one. He's in the team, and otherwise the team is unchanged from the Netherlands game. Kind of interesting change on the bench, though, because John Sheridan is on the bench for this one. John Sheridan, the player, is just Jack Charlton, I think, didn't like because he was just too skillful. He might give people ideas. And John Sheridan only actually makes it into the Irish team years later when he's basically crocked and has had to reinvent himself as a defensive midfield player who doesn't move.
And that's the player Jack was after.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, he's on the bench for this one, so he's an option if things start getting a bit tense, which is every indication they might, because there's not a huge amount between these teams. Romania, you would say, have the better ball players, certainly in the form of Hagi. The game starts off as kind of the first half will continue with Hagi causing all sorts of problems for the Irish defence. He interchanges nicely with Sabal. Rajachoy steps over it and Sabal shoots wide. He should really hit the target. That's a really good chance for Romania early doors. And then Balint has another effort, kind of a shot. I don't think I've ever seen since. A really pronounced kind of banana swing on the ball with the outside of the boot towards the near post. Bonner holds onto it nicely. We were just talking about the curse of John Aldridge in front of goal at this World Cup. Much like in the Netherlands game, he does finish when it doesn't matter because he has the ball in the net in the first half, but Niall Quinn has already been whistled up for a foul. So a very even first 15-20 minutes, but it's really clear that Hagi is the danger man and that he's causing the Irish defence all kinds of problems. He's switching from the right to the left. Chris Morrison, fairness, is doing a good job of kind of chasing him down, and we are seeing to some extent why Morris is in the team with his remarkable pace and engine, which is keeping Hagi occasionally far enough away that he's not doing a huge amount of danger. And then after 17 minutes, John Aldridge decides to take matters into his own hands. Now, Aldridge has picked up an Achilles injury. He clearly knows that he's not going to be able to continue. He said this in subsequent years. And so John Aldridge's thought process at this point is, I'll do Hagi, try and take him out of the game, and that will be my parting gift to the team as I exit this match. And so 17 minutes in, he puts in an absolutely horrendous tackle, ridiculously high, flying, not violent, but very high, on Hagi, kind of around the halfway line. And understandably, he's immediately booked. And Aldridge is actually himself, in the 30 years he's had to reflect on this, has noticed the flaw in his logic, namely that if he got sent off at this point, that would not be a help to the Irish team, regardless of whether Hagi was crocked or not. In fact, he only gets booked. Hagi is fit enough to continue.
It's a more shithousery in gamesmanship, although a lot less flawed than I suppose, drugging your opponents on the sly. But again, I suppose if we were looking forward to a day without this yesterday and Aldo's had to bring the shithousery.
He has, and actually gets replaced after 21 minutes. The message gets across to the touchline. If you watch back the footage, I only noticed this watching it on TG Cahir there a few weeks ago. This is actually the first of two occasions in which John Aldridge will be caught audibly swearing at a World Cup. You can hear him roaring at the Irish bench, "Me fucking Achilles is gone." The message gets through anyway, and Cascarino comes on. So we do have that big man pairing, albeit not in the circumstances Charlton would have wished. The rest of the half continues pretty much along the same pattern. Hadji absolutely clowns Morris, cuts inside and shoots wide. Then there's a very kind of strange free kick from Kevin Sheedy. The ball's rolled to him and he just kind of flicks it up and volleys it. There's real power behind it. It's straight at the goalkeeper, but kind of really inventive stuff. And then just before halftime, Ireland have easily their best chance of the half. McGrath gets on the ball about 30 yards out on the right. He clips over a really delicate cross. Cascarino heads it down. It's probably his first real contribution towards Sheedy. And Sheedy can't just quite get enough purchase on the shot. He's kind of stretching. Toe pokes it with his left foot, but Silvio Lung manages to claw it away from about 6 yards. A really good chance, well worked, and that's as good as the chances get for Ireland in the first half, because at halftime it's still goalless.
I wondered how Sheedy ended up there. Like, where was he playing that? Because I thought he was at the left, and he ends up sort of coming. If it's a right-footed player, that probably goes in, because he strikes it with the left, and it's a little bit more awkward when it's knocked down for him.
Well, he did start his Ireland career as a central midfielder. Right. And he has been drifting in a lot in the two games to date. It's an interesting thing that it is kind of classically where you would expect maybe a left-sided player to be getting that header that Cascarino gets, you know, pushing in from the left. You notice a lot watching these Charlton-era Ireland games. The wide players end up, or the kind of target men end up in wide positions an awful lot because they're chasing the ball into the corners. So you have this ridiculous sight of Cascarino or Quinn trying to cross the ball for like Ray Houghton.
Yeah,
quite a bit.
John Walters would have fit right into the Jack Charlton era, playing wide on the right as a target man, you know?
Absolutely, or kind of Dublin City era Killian Brennan, to have a only very slightly more contemporary relevant reference.
Yeah, it worked out well in the England game. Sheedy dashing inside.
It did. And, you know, he's a bit of a frustrated playmaker, Kevin Sheedy. I think it was a valiant effort. I wouldn't be too critical of him for missing it. It's a good save by Lung. Anyway, at halftime, the RT panel are still banging their, by now, threadbare drum about Georgie Hadji, who Giles once again describes as brainless in a first half in which he's totally run the game and totally outsmarted the Ireland defence and only really been denied by Paddy Bonner.
I've had resistance on my criticism of John Giles before, and I know far be it from John to care about what anyone like me says about him, but he just went as a pundit, and it always seems to have been something in his game, more so in the later years when he doesn't seem to have done any research. But he seems to make these snap judgments based on maybe 10 minutes of football about someone like Hadji, who maybe did something brainless in a game, and just assume that's how they are for the rest of their career. Like, he remembers that one thing forever and never, ever deviates from it.
That's a real trait of Dublin men of John's age, I have to say.
There's no excuse in Hadji's case, the fact that he'd already won a European Cup at this point.
Yeah, but as you said, he's moved to Madrid. That happened just before this, so...
This is really the original Ronaldo was a cod. But yeah, you wonder how much of that is a genuine snap judgment and how much is, you know, basically theatrics, which Giles isn't as prone to as Dunphy, but it's still a very rash kind of call to make.
I kind of disagree with you, though. I think maybe the criticism is weighing Noel King style on Hadji in that first half, because, you know, some very, very neat bits of play, and in close quarters he's very good, but his radar does seem to be off in that first half, and he does an awful lot, but he doesn't really produce much.
I think he hits the target like two or three times in the half, and works those 1-2s, and again it's kind of Bonner did actually have a very good World Cup. I know, as I said, it's kind of fashionable to criticise him now and to say he wasn't as, he's a bit overrated in hindsight. But yeah, I think Bonner makes Hagi's efforts look a bit less impressive than they actually were. Hagi has the first chance of the second half. He has a free kick deflected wide by Paul McGrath, which is actually pretty close. I think Bonner's nowhere if that's on target or if it's not deflected. And then we have possibly Ireland's best chance of the game. And Niall Quinn, as I was saying, the two big men tend to end up in wide positions somehow. And Niall Quinn sends over actually a very well-judged cross from the right that Cascarino attacks really forcefully but heads over when possibly he should do a lot better with that sort of chance. It's kind of meat and drink to him. I know he's under a bit of pressure and maybe that's why he gets under it slightly, but that's probably as clear-cut a chance as Ireland are going to get. As the game kind of drifts back in Romania's favour, there's a few decent efforts, another longer-range effort from Hagi that Bonner tips over. Bonner saves very well then from a kind of a short corner routine at the near post. It's kind of a high save to the near post that he forces over, but he really needs to get behind it. And then probably his most impressive save of the World Cup. Hagi picks the ball up very deep, drives down the right, and then cuts in on his left and fires an absolutely barnstorming shot towards the top corner at the near post. And it's a flying save from Paddy Bonner. Again, you would kind of expect him to make it, but it is very spectacular and he does very well to divert it behind. And that's kind of the most heart-stopping moment of the second half. Thereafter, the game peters out towards extra time, which I'm not sure either side would particularly welcome given the heat and intensity of the game that they've just been through. But yeah, at full time, it's Ireland 0, Romania 0, and we're headed for extra time.
Mm. And at this point, you've got to have an eye on a few players to hook on, to hook off. You're going to have to start thinking about penalties. And there is probably a little bit of worry of players who are booked as well getting tired and, you know, causing a little bit of trouble. Not with their heads screwed on a little bit more than Aldridge's was, which is, I'll do him and he won't be able to take a penno. But I think Paul McGrath is one that the suggestions that he's lucky not to be sent off in extra time, isn't there?
Yeah, Paul McGrath's carrying a yellow card. And yeah, I think it's Lupescu he goes in heavy on. And the referee has a very, very stern word with him. One of those where you kind of figure early in the bollocking that he's not going to send him off, because if he was, he wouldn't still be talking to him. But yeah, McGrath in extra time is fairly lucky not to go off. The chances in extra time are fairly evenly distributed. Ireland's best one, Steve Stalton, has a free kick that's not too far wide. Houghton has almost adds to his implausible range of headed goals in important games. Following up a Sheedy attack, he kind of loops a header over the bar. And then Hagi wriggles away from Townsend and he hits a kind of bobbling shot from 20 yards that Bonner pushes wide. Again, very kind of smart goalkeeping, particularly to get it away from danger. But that's pretty much it. We're headed into the Republic of Ireland's very first penalty shootout. And this is a type of drama that presumably millions watching back home have never encountered before. It's kind of really uncharted territory in terms of even understanding what a penalty shootout is for a lot of the people watching.
It's kind of interesting that we talked about Rijkaard in the previous episode, having got his yellow card and being out of the quarterfinal if the Netherlands got there. Hagi was in the same boat as well.
We should mention as well, you get Steve Staunton to mention for his contribution in the second half. I mean, his notable contribution, as we'll see, is he gets injured and Dave O'Leary comes on in his place.
Yeah, Jack had actually wanted to bring a midfielder on, presumably John Sheridan, but his hand was forced when Staunton picked up a knock and David O'Leary comes on and plays left back, kind of an unusual sight. He plays left back, delivering long balls with his right foot for the most part. It's O'Leary's first minutes of the World Cup and in itself something of a vindication for him after his long exile from the national team and his long estrangement from Jack Charlton's affections.
Well, let's get into the penalty shootout then and find out how this finishes.
A slightly unfavourable omen for Ireland is that just 5 weeks earlier, Paddy Bonner had kept goal for Celtic against Aberdeen in the Scottish Cup final. And that game had gone to a penalty shootout, which finished 9-8 to Aberdeen. So not great recent form for our Paddy heading into this shootout. He has prepared by watching footage of Steaua Bucharest penalty shootout, but the only player he recognised was Lacatouche, who was suspended from this game anyway, so that's been of limited value. So Hagi steps up to take the first penalty, and it's kind of high and unstoppable, as you'd expect. Bonner goes the right way, but he's never really getting a hand on it. Sheedy takes Ireland's first. It's pretty much the same, straight over Silvio Long's head at a just unstoppable speed. A really brave penalty, actually, because there's always a fear you might skew that over the bar. Lupu takes a very casual penalty, just a walking run-up. It's not too far in the corner, but Bonner doesn't quite get there.
It's the one he probably should, looking at these. He goes the right way for quite a few of these, Packy, but that's, you're like...
Wrong, well, he does, isn't he?
He does, but...
Yeah, but he should have got that one.
He should have, I think. I think it's notable with these penalties, and Houghton is next up for Ireland, and it's a low kind of central one to the right, but Lung goes the wrong way. These are good penalties if the players knew which way the keeper was diving, or if they'd sussed which way the keeper was diving. If these are just percentage penalties, they're very badly placed, other than Sheedy's. The rest of Ireland's penalties are eminently savable if the keeper's going the right way.
Presumably, they didn't employ those kind of tactics about where the goalkeeper was going, because Jack apparently told them essentially to pick a corner and don't change your mind, and that's all he said to them before the penalty shootout.
He also said, I think you should blast them rather than place them, which has only sunk in with Kevin Sheedy, unfortunately. Obviously, John Aldridge would have been a prime taker, but... he's not on the field. So at this stage, it's 2-2 in the penalty shootout. And Rotariu steps up, high to the left. Bonner goes the right way. And next up is Townsend, low to the left. Again, kind of not straight in the corner, but Lung gets nowhere near it. My memory of the next couple of penalties, so it's 3-3 at this point. I don't know if I was too nervous or if there were just too many people around the small television that I couldn't see. But I was out on the balcony adjoining the living room, looking out over kind of the fields of slow roads and slow gardens. And I remember a bunch of kids being out on the field we used as a football pitch, kind of reenacting this penalty shootout in real time. So someone would come out and tell them who was taking the penalty and if they'd scored. And then they'd reenact that. And it was kind of, I suppose, their way of dealing with the tension. The next penalty is high to the right, and Bonner gets a sniff of it from Lupescu, but it's too well struck and he can't quite get enough on it to divert it right. And now people's hearts are in their mouths, because who would fill you with the most confidence at this point? Stepping up to take what could be a sudden death penalty. Pretty much anyone but Tony Cascarino. I don't know if Tony Cascarino, I don't think he's ever taken a penalty before in his senior career. He's kind of a lumbering target man with a little bit of the classic decent touch for a big man, but no one's idea of a set piece expert. He steps up, he drills it low, he takes half the pitch with him. There's kind of, he disappears in kind of a clod of turf. And the ball just kind of squirms under Silvio Long. I think it's so kind of badly hit and so scuffed that it goes under Long's dive. I think if he catches it right and he catches the ball in the middle, Long probably keeps that out, but huge sighs of relief all around Ireland as that hits the net.
You could use the Andy Townsend. If anything rude, he's hit that too poorly.
Exactly, yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, possibly the origin of that. Next up is Daniel Timofte. This is probably the second most famous moment in Irish sport. Timofte steps up. He kind of addresses the ball to the left. Bonner says subsequently he knew he was hitting it to Bonner's right. There was no other way he could hit it with that stance.
But the thing about that, Packy, is you've guessed right every direction so far and you've not saved any. So that doesn't really fill us with any comfort, you know?
Well, this time he does. It's a telegraph penalty. It's badly struck. It's the kind of classic nice height for the goalkeeper. Mm. And Bonner gets two really firm palms on it and guides it away and then jumps into the air with a really kind of charming schoolboyish enthusiasm and grin on his face.
And it's now Romania's second substitute, Daniel Timofte, Dynamo Bucharest, to step forward. Timofte against Bonner. The big man from Donegal has set it up.
And now it's down to the forgotten man of Irish football, David O'Leary. Again, Jack Charlton, by all accounts, had absolute conniptions when he saw O'Leary coming forward to take this. He's not a believer in centre-halves taking penalties.
He is absolutely gutted. He said, and he doesn't even change his story. He's like, in all the interviews after, he was like, oh, I couldn't believe it. Like, I was gutted when I saw Dave O'Leary walking up to take the penalty.
Understandably. I think it will be poor form to try and recapitulate one of the great moments in Irish sports. So we might just cue George Hamilton at this point.
This kick can decide it all. The nation holds its breath. Yes, we're there! Through to the quarterfinals of the World Cup.
So yeah, as David O'Leary disappears beneath a mound of tracksuits, what do we think about that penalty?
I'd say it's a solid penalty. Interesting little backstory, which I only heard just as we mentioned George Hamilton and hear the commentary there. The scream, the yeah that you hear in the background. I always assume that was George just, and knowing how you would with microphones and, you know, at that moment, you've forgotten to turn it off. So he turns it off mid-scream. It's not George losing his shit and celebrating at all. It's one of the producers. Because we mentioned this off-air, Turlock. He had no co-commentator. So he's done the full game, George Hamilton. This was the days before co-commentator. So George has done it all, the whole game by himself. And he just has a producer who would be there sort of. He did an interview with Second Captains recently where he talked about this, but so it's well worth a listen if you want to go back and visit that. But he talks about how he's nearly feeding off this producer who's aware of everything else because George is focused on the job solely. So this producer knows all the stuff that's going on, and he's nearly like the fan he's feeding off to tell how people are feeling. But yeah, the scream comes from his producer, so he cuts his mic at that point, you know?
Well, if also, it was a no, it would have been Dunphy.
No, Dunphy's vindicated, you see, because David O'Leary is Dunphy's man. So I think Dunphy's back on the bandwagon at this point. But yeah, it could also have come from Liam Brady, who's commentating for, I think, the BBC or ITV, one of the British stations anyway. And he famously loses all objectivity before this penalty. And I think he just roars something like, "Go on, Dave," and then lets out a shriek when it hits the net.
I can't imagine what a Liam Brady shriek sounds like.
There's very few people who know what that sounds like, and I don't want to swap places with any of them. Yeah, it's a...
Newspapers are one of the very few things that come cheap in Rome. The Eternal City is certainly cashing in on the World Cup finals. It's become Rip-Off City. Whether it's a restaurant, a bar, or a shop, the chances are that you'll have to pay well over the top. Taxis seem to have a supplement for just about everything. One tried to charge me an extra £3 just because he had a radio.
I suppose we'll get on to the meaning of this and the reaction to this later on. I know we have another game to get through.
We do.
And incidentally, the Irish players, I think, are going to watch on the field.
Okay, well, what's interesting, just as you mentioned, your own experience with trying to watch the penalty shootout and being unable to watch it, Jack has sort of in subsequent years talked about his inability to see the game because of all the people and players standing in the way. And I think it was a misconstrued thing that he couldn't watch the penalty shootout down to nerves or something like that, because he talks about it a little while after, saying that he was standing watching the telly, basically the TV in the stadium, so he could see how it was all going down. And he says that one of the main reasons he turned around at first, actually, was to rob a cigarette from the crowd, because there was a lad in the crowd smoking. Jack hadn't smoked in 2 years. And he goes up to the stanchions. I was like, "Give me a bleeding cigarette." And your man, you know, can't believe his luck. I mean, I can't believe no one's interviewed that guy who managed to give Jack Charlton a cigarette and some matches before. I've never seen the clip of Jack smoking, actually. That would be, it's never been, I've never seen the any pictures or anything like that. I suppose everyone's probably a little bit busy watching the penalty shootout. So we'll come back to some post-match reaction in the Ireland game very soon. But we're going to get into Italy-Uruguay. The newly formed strike partnership of Schillaci and Baggio is undisturbed this time. Vecini's decided to leave it as it is. Shockingly enough, you know, he's been basically convinced that these two in-form goal scorers are his most prolific duo, as opposed to the players who are talking in the press about being haunted with all their misses. Interestingly, though, on Uruguay's side, the coach, Oscar Tavares, has left out Ruben Sosa. He's dropped him. Considering we talked about his importance to the team, that seems quite a surprising omission from the squad. or from the starting 11, I should say. There is an early goal in the game, but unfortunately it's ruled out. Baggio hits a sweet free kick. But having learned of the rule when England had this issue against Netherlands, the English referee, George Courtney, rules it out. It was an indirect free kick. So another issue with this that, again, doesn't seem to... I don't really remember this in most other tournaments, actually. Aguilera is the guy who's come in for Souza, starts up front instead by himself. And he has a great chance early on where Bergomi is essentially a sloppy back pass to the old Zenga bus. Zenga manages to get to it and keep it out, but it doesn't happen for Uruguay. And really after that, it's Italy who largely dominates. Schillaci, he's just getting away from defenders too often. He's finding space to run either in front of or in behind. They really aren't marking him. And you want to give Italy credit for saying they've got dangerous attackers all over the pitch, like Baggio, who they have to watch. But he's the man who's scoring the goals consistently for them so far. So the fact that he's sort of running untracked more often than not is really, really silly on Uruguay's part. And there's a really big chance when one of the defenders essentially boots up at a long ball free kick. Uruguayans basically switch off. They ignore it. It goes through the two centre-backs and they go to let it bounce back to the goalkeeper. Schillaci completely untracked. He's over by the left-back at this point. The ball comes up between the two centre-backs. Schillaci just runs straight across, picks the ball up and really should score. He puts it right at Alves, who manages to... It's still a good save because it's so close and on the bounce, but he really should do better. As this goes on, Italy still scoreless. And you might think at this point, Pacini might revert to type because Viali's on the bench. And I think there's, you know, we talked about Viali being the golden boy. Instead, he brings on that 30-year-old Aldo Serena for Berti, and relatively untested at international level. He's got plenty of experience, but he essentially comes on to change the game. He makes a big impact, wins the header for the first goal, flicks it on to Baggio, who then finds Schillaci. Schillaci this time makes no mistake. As the ball is flicked onto him, you can see there's a few Uruguayans approaching, but he still has enough space. He basically turns and first time smashes it with his left foot. Alves miles off his line, just in an awful position. He doesn't give himself the best chance of saving it, but it's a glorious goal by Schillaci. Once again, for me, I don't know how you guys feel about this. The player, I think it might even be Baggio who ruins it. He should know better, but he drags Schillaci down as Schillaci's running. It's one of those, Schillaci's running off to the direction of the fans, and the players behind him pull him down and nearly knock him over. I absolutely hate that. Absolutely hate it. It's a way to ruin a good goal celebration, I think.
I always worry that players will injure their teammates. Yeah. But...
Same. Well, I said it last time with Gascoigne jumping on Beardsley, where it's like, Beardsley's tiny. If you want to bring him on later in the game now, he's going to be injured because he's back straining from carrying you. But yeah, later on then, the second goal essentially kills it off. And it is the man Serena we mentioned. The Uruguayans again just absolutely sleeping. The free kick comes across from the right-hand side. There's two Italian players at the back post of one Uruguayan defender. Serena's the man who gets on. He heads it in, bottom corner, and it looks like a masterstroke of a substitution by Vicini, who definitely would have been getting criticised for some of the changes or selections he'd have made early on in the tournament. 2-0 it ends, and it sets up quite a quarter-final. Italy are going to be taking on Ireland. So what's the post-match reaction like then, Turlock? We won't get quite into what they think of the Italy stuff yet. I imagine everyone's too busy celebrating at this point.
They are, although in relation to the Italy game, Jack Charlton does say that he thinks the much later kickoff will suit Ireland in that quarter-final. It's 9 p.m. local time, which will be a great relief after the heat of Genoa. Yeah, basically, the country has gone into meltdown. There's a great little vignette. We were talking in an earlier episode about what you'd feature or who would play the Irish players and staff in a film about Italia 90. You'd have to include this in it. The European Community Summit is happening at Dublin Castle. And at one point, whilst Charles Haughey is giving a press conference, a reporter bursts into the room to tell them that Ireland are a penalty kick away from the quarterfinals. And everyone immediately just runs out. I think just leaving Charles Haughey there talking to an empty room, although eventually he heads out as well. So everyone crowds around the TV banks to watch Dave O'Leary put the penalty away. It seems like talking about goal scorers being in danger, it's kind of a dangerous thing to be the parent of an Irish player at this World Cup, because you immediately get besieged as soon as they do anything. Dave's dad, Christy, is completely mobbed in the Talca house that evening. Christy says, if he'd miss, I'd have to emigrate. Also, Paddy Bomber's mother, the people of Donegal listeners from to earlier episodes will know what we mean when we say they've taken a break from their satanic rituals to descend upon Packy's mum's grace at her house near Burtonport. Rory Quinn comes out with an awful lot of codswallop. He says, I don't know how you say this off the cuff, but he says, this is a spontaneous outbreak of a new form of folk culture. I don't know if that's widely ignored.
I don't know what that means.
I get what he's driving at, but it's not really in keeping with the euphoria of the moment. Speaking of euphoria, Margaret Thatcher, her spokesman gives a comment on behalf of the Prime Minister. She says, euphoria reigns. The Prime Minister is delighted for the Irish, which is kind of similar to what she said after the Falklands War. but yeah, politically, there seems to be a fair amount of unity in Belfast. Reporters, Northern correspondents report that the game was as widely followed and as well received in kind of loyalist areas of Belfast as in the nationalist areas, although a few lads do lose the head slightly and head up the Shankill with a tricolour and they immediately get beaten up. Just kind of what you would expect. But yeah, it is just complete bedlam, as you could expect. There's a gentleman called Derek Leonard from Clonsilla, whose wife is giving birth in the Coombe Hospital. And he decides to name the son Patrick after Bonner makes a save and then immediately changes it to Patrick David. So if Patrick David Leonard is out there, we'd love to hear from him.
A few just stupid stories elsewhere. It doesn't seem like they would have known America, but NBC decides to air episodes of Quantum Leap for 5 straight days. So, I mean, you could watch the end of the World
because
Cup.
Because of Packy Bonner celebration?
Yeah. You could watch the end of the World Cup or you could watch 5 straight days of Quantum Leap. You've also got anti-government riots breaking out in Lusaka in Zambia. And just an interesting piece on in the Ireland camp, actually, a bit of news that I think, again, it came true retrospectively. But I would say immediately after this, Mick Byrne's knocking on Jack Charlton's door because Mick Byrne had asked Jack in the qualifiers to get them basically an audience with the Pope if they were to get through. And Jack kind of fobbed him off, going, yeah, no bother, I'll start that, got the Pope's number, all that kind of carry on. And then after the pedo shootout, Mick straight on to him, back in, and he's like, you will get that sorted now, Jack, won't you? So Jack Charlton has about 3 days to organise this. you just imagine Jack in a bit of, oh, fuck it anyway, like, how am I going to put this together? But they do manage to get it. I'm sure we might touch on that further down the line, but they manage in the intervening times before the next game to have an audience with the Pope. Mick delighted there in all their baggy, weird tracksuit equipment, which I'm sure was relatively unusual for the Vatican.
John Paul, obviously not a Quantum Leap fan.
I have a couple of music stories, actually, that might interest Dave. In a sign of the times, Prince has to cancel one of his two shows at Parky Queeve. We weren't slagging off Prince. Someone else was. Via us, anyway.
Tell that cat to chill.
Exactly, yeah. But the promoters blame the World Cup euphoria for low ticket sales at Parky Queeve, so that's been reduced to a one-day tour. And we also have sight of Ireland's very first all-night rave party, which is going to take place at the Point on July 22nd, featuring Rebel MC, Betty Boo and Cold Cut.
Wow. I mean, you go for the first night of that and then you spend the hangover watching 4 days of Quantum Leap. You're golden. Right, well, tomorrow, we better look ahead. We've got coming up Spain in action against Yugoslavia and England. They've got a big game up against Belgium.
Baggio, Serena, Schillaci! Oh, what a goal! What a goal! And who is stepping forward? David O'Leary.
Because I couldn't believe it when David O'Leary went to take the penalty. I thought, no, come on.
The nation holds its breath. Yes! Fantastic! I said it to start. Ciao, Roma. Buongiorno, Roma. What do you think, lads? Magic.
We think it was fantastic. No, we think you're being silly. No, we think it was bloody great.
Well, no, let me tell you for a start, before we join our panel for discussion, that ALF has been deferred and Home Away has been deferred and we're on the air until 10 o'clock.
You are ALF.